Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
Mark right side, spot down, kick away, blocked. It is blocked, and it's picked up by the Lions. Down the left sideline, Glover Quinn. Glover inside the 50, inside the 45. It's spinning down to the Viking 42-yard line. How big is that?
Prater for 58. There's the snap, spot, kick on the way. It is good. He got it. Matt Prater sent it through from 58 yards out. We're still playing football. How about that?
If they come up empty from here, it would be about a 46-yard field goal. Stafford checks his protection. He'll work out of the gun. Play clock at three. Matthews got it back. Sets, looks, throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch. Inside the 15. Inside the 10. And he's breaking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags. Start the plane. This game is over. What a comeback by the Lions. Golden Tate caught it, spun, and found pay dirt.
You know, all in all, I mean, just in terms of our guys hanging in there when things are a little tough, they've done it well. The offense, when you needed them to move it down and get in position to score, they were able to do so. Did it with poise and did it with a little bit of flair. That was, 20 whatever seconds it was left and no timeouts. Those guys work at it.
Didn't work out that way. Our guys did a heck of a job all just sticking together. Can't say enough about our special teams unit. Drive at the end of the game and our kicker doesn't make an unbelievable kick. We're feeling a whole lot different than we are right now. Just super savvy move, winning the coin toss in overtime and getting the ball, never giving it back. So it was good. We were able to kind of get out of our own way in the fourth quarter, convert some third and longs. No, it's a huge one. That's a really good football team we just played. A really, really good one. And their defense is fantastic. You know, to come into their place and get a win, you know, first one in the division this year is a good one.
You know, there's some things I know we can do better, and we will do better. There's things that just keep rearing its ugly head, so we just got to get it right, and I get it, and we'll keep fighting. Again, it starts with me. I want to make sure everybody understands that. I mean, it starts with me getting everybody involved in this organization to do things right. But again, we got to slow the run down, and we got to make sure that, you know, we control the other team's better player. We just got to get better in some areas.
Barrett gets the snap. Barrett feeds it to Weber, sweeping left side to the Nebraska. 25, 20, 15, 10, 5. Takes it to the end zone for the score. Mike Weber shucked a defender on his way to 6 points, and it's 20 to 3 Ohio State on Mike Weber's seventh touchdown run of the year. Snap to JT Barrett. Fakes the handoff, looks to throw, sends Ed Ball deep down the middle of the field. Curtis Samuel got it to the Nebraska 35. Still going at the 20. Curtis Samuel weaving his way to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone for a touchdown. First play, second half, JT Barrett, 75 yards in the air to Curtis Samuel, who got behind safety Aaron Williams, 37-3 Buckeyes.
It's a top 10 team, very talented team that, our only loss is overtime to Wisconsin. So our guys played well, and, you know, the quarterback got hurt, but I understand he's going to be okay, and we wish him well, and just very pleased with their effort. Very pleased with their passing attack, and also we did, they're just all around, very good performance.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
An extravaganza indeed. Welcome once again right here to ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader, and today is, as is every Monday, we like to call it a Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the program. Football, and probably a little bit more football on the program today. A lot of really good stuff over the weekend. So much to cover, so much to recap from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. Got big football coming up actually on Wednesday as well. From the local side of things is the UT Rockets are going to take on their nemesis, the team that continues to ruin their season year after year after year for several. That is Northern Illinois. So we've got that going on. And we got a lot to recap, I should say. Huge wins by Michigan and Ohio State on Saturday. 59-3 was one, and the other, just to show that we're a little bit better than you, yes, 62-3. Okay, great. That's what Ohio State did to Nebraska. Quality of competition there, of course, is a factor as well. because the Wolverines put one on a almost hapless Maryland team, and it was a top 10 showdown in Columbus, prime time. Throwback unis. That's the third. Jim, is that the third primetime Ohio State game of the season thus far?
Yeah, I think it is, yeah.
They're living under the lights, man. They played at Camp Randall. No, wait a minute. Wait. This might be four. They were at Oklahoma.
You're right.
Under the lights in Norman.
That was a night game, too. Yeah.
They were at Camp Randall against Wisconsin under the lights. They were at Penn State where they had the whiteout under the lights. And then they had just this past Saturday against the Big Red, Nebraska, the Cornhuskers. And they just took it to Nebraska. So they are just, I mean, are they the most popular team in college? I wonder why it is that the networks keep saying, hey, Ohio State, you're playing late with us.
I don't know. I'm totally fine with it, especially on the Saturday thing. I'm sure we'll get to that at some point down the line, but with the whole Friday thing. But, yeah, I had forgotten about Oklahoma earlier in the season. It's really recently, obviously, these last couple of games, with the exception of Northwestern, three of the last four now, they've been under the lights.
Yeah, very, very interesting. And the Buckeyes did not disappoint this time. And, you know, actually, they're 2-2, I guess, really, in terms of great performances. They were tremendous in the 45-24 rout of Oklahoma on the road. They were tremendous on Saturday against Nebraska. And then they of course, had an OT game against Wisconsin, and then they lost at Penn State. So 2-2, interesting that three of those nighttime primetime games were all on the road. Only one of them, this was the Nebraska game that was at home. So
yeah.
So Ohio State, very, very impressive. The long game looks like it's back, at least for now, against a Wisconsin team that was supposedly one of the best pass defense teams in the Big Ten. We talked to Paul Keels about that on Thursday's program, and he pointed out that they have a conference leading and among the nation leading 15 interceptions through eight games going in. And instead, how about it? JT Barrett said, okay, bring it. Let's see what you got. And he just found guys. They got to Curtis Samuel the ball early and often in that game. You could tell it was a point of emphasis going in. Got some very hard running from Mike Weber Jr. as well. So really just a tremendous all-around performance. Michigan, not to be denied, and maybe wanting to make a statement of their own. Maybe Jim Harbaugh felt like, wait, what? We're number two in both of the polls, and we got leapfrogged by Clemson? Wait, what? Excuse me, as I have a coughing spell in the middle of the show. We didn't get to the number two spot behind Alabama. The schedule makers, or not schedule makers, beg your pardon, the committee members of the college football playoff didn't think that we had won impressively enough or had looked as good as we need to, so they just put one on. And they did it even respectfully. They didn't, you know, rub it in terms of Wilton Spate throwing fourth quarter touchdown bombs up 50-3. But 59-3, they still managed to pile it on and look very, very impressive in tearing apart Maryland. So the two teams at the top of the Big Ten West doing their, or Big Ten East, beg your pardon, doing their thing. The Big Ten West, well, it looks like it's Wisconsin and everybody else now that Nebraska is on a two-game losing streak. And they were taken apart, of course, by the Buckeyes in clearly the most complete game the Ohio State Buckeyes have played all season long. So much better to have a 62-3 win over a Nebraska team that was ranked 10 in the country than a 77-10 win over BG to start the season, or 58-0 over Rutgers. So they're really, really kind of trying to quiet the critics and maybe even quiet any self-doubts that the Buckeye players may have had over the course of the month of October, which was not very kind to them.
No, it wasn't. And I'm very interested to see what the playoff committee and their second rankings do tomorrow night, not just with Ohio State, because, you know, Nebraska came in as a top 10 team, very, very solid, and everyone's pretty much acknowledging that, and they're still sixth in the two polls. I don't expect Michigan, though, despite their whooping of Maryland, I don't expect Michigan to take number two. My reasoning for that is I checked Syracuse blasted their opponent Syracuse 54-0, so I bet the committee, at least for a week, considers that a wash.
You mean Clemson blasted Syracuse?
Yes, yeah, I said that backwards, didn't I? Yes, I meant Clemson, of course, yeah, not Syracuse winning. We'd be having a totally different discussion about the playoff rankings if that was the case. And then, of course, number four, the one team we were all talking about, Bob, last week. Why is A&M in there? Well, they won't be this time because they ended up falling.
Yeah, and how about, you know, just the way some of these teams that once they, you know, once they are given the respect that they crave nationally, then just kind of, you know, wet the bed like that. And how about Baylor? While we're on college football, how about Baylor? Baylor 2 weeks ago was one of the seven, I want to say, remaining undefeated teams.
Yeah, that was just a couple weeks ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, ranked in the top 15. Baylor was I think 12th, and we were talking about if they can find a way to run the table, even again with the same old discussion we have at this time of the year, without a conference championship game in the Big 12. You know, could Baylor potentially and West Virginia be candidates for that? And lo and behold, what did we see? Well, we saw Baylor lose, and then apparently once they lost, they must have just said, well, it's over. Season's over. Why should we really worry about it too much? You know, we're not going to get there. We can't play for a conference championship. We're just kind of screwed now. And they just decided to pack it in. There's no other way to describe the number 17 Baylor Bears this past Saturday in a rivalry game against TCU at McLean Stadium. Dropping one by 40, the Horned Frogs blasted a team that was 2 weeks earlier, getting, you know, some discussion at least for how high can they climb in the CFP playoff rankings because of their undefeated record. They lose their worst home loss since 2005, 62-22. After winning their first six games under their acting head coach Jim Grobe in the wake of the scandal that cost Art Briles his job, Baylor now drops two in a row, and they lose by 40. That is just a remarkable thing to see. So everything is obviously going to have to shake itself out, but I, too, am very interested to see what the power rankings look like tomorrow night when they are announced. Now that, you know, we look at where things stand or where things stood going into this, into the CFP, first CFP poll. And I was a little surprised, I think some people were too, that the Clemson Tigers were over Michigan. But I think Jim's probably right. They were impressive in their win over Syracuse, 54-0. Michigan was dominant, 59-3 over Maryland. It'll probably sit that way. And probably Washington, which did its own damage against Cal. This was pretty big too. Washington kind of feeling like they're not getting any respect. They were number four in both polls. And they end up being number five in the CFP ranking last Tuesday. Passed over by A&M, which lost to Mississippi State by a touchdown, 35-28. Bang, here comes Washington, 66-27. No doubt putting style points on the Cal Berkeley Bears because, they've got a committee to impress. And not only does undefeated Washington probably now get slid back into the top four, I would imagine in that order, Alabama, Clemson, Michigan, and Washington. Now the battle has been truly joined to who the first one-loss team is that will be outside of the top four. Will it be the Ohio State Buckeyes by virtue of that 62-3 thrashing of number 10 Nebraska? Or will it be Louisville, who came in and figured the same thing? They were incredibly disrespected by their seventh-place ranking in the initial college football playoff ranking last Tuesday. They were just seventh? Wait, you're kidding me. Seventh? We have one loss at Death Valley, at Clemson, in a close game, and you're putting a seventh? They felt terribly disrespected. We have the most dynamic, explosive offensive weapon in college football in Lamar Jackson, who's doing sick things on a weekly basis to teams, and you were seventh? So all they did was go out and take on Boston College, 52-7. Lamar Jackson punctuating his Heisman Trophy status with seven more touchdowns. Four in the air, three on the ground. And oh, by the way, that's his third game with at least seven touchdowns this season. Nobody else has more than one. I mean, just think about what that cat is doing there. So, Jim, what do you, I mean, you know, we'll debate this and we'll discuss this and we'll take calls on this and we'll talk to some of our expert guests about this, but who is the best one-loss team in college football now that we've seen yet another week since the rankings came out? Is it the Buckeyes or is it the Louisville Cardinals? I really don't think there's a third question or third choice there, to be quite honest.
Yeah, the only other couple one-loss teams I even see in the entire nation at this point is West Virginia, and they're down at 20th as of last week, and Boise's in the Mountain West, so unless you're an undefeated team, we're not even going to count you for not being in a power conference.
Yeah.
Florida
was a one-loss team that lost to Arkansas, 31-10, badly.
Yep.
So they're not in this. We're looking at the two-loss teams now. Like
yeah, there's only these couple. It's in terms of power conference teams, Bob, at this point that only have the one loss, it's Ohio State, Louisville, and West Virginia. That's it. That's kind of surprising. That means pretty much the bulk of the entire nation has two or more losses at this point.
And West Virginia is quite simply not even in their league.
No.
They're not even in the other two.
They already lost Oklahoma State, and they still have Oklahoma coming up for however the top of that mess that is the Big 12 shakes out.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So to me, this is, you know, I'm very, very interested to see how things play out in the next 3 weeks with Wisconsin and Auburn. We talked to Paul Keels about this a little bit this past week, and in fact, we talked to who did we have on our national college football writer from SB Nation?
Bill Conley.
Bill Conley. And we talked about, you know, is there possibly a two-loss team that could find its way into the Final Four in the college football playoff? And he didn't think so at all. And I'm looking at Wisconsin right now, to be quite honest with you. This is a team that you might argue kind of controls its destiny. Their only two losses were to Michigan, number two in the country, 14-7 in a very hard-fought defensive slugfest. And Ohio State in overtime,
right,
30-23. Those are their two losses, and that's it. And Ohio State's a top 5-6 team. So, and at the time, I want to say they were two, were they not, or three, two or three, at the time. So, you know, Wisconsin has by far the most impressive two loss record, you know, resume thus far. But they still
Buckeyes
have to
were
win out.
Two at the time.
I'm sorry,
Buckeyes were number two at the time.
They were number two at the time. And just to kind of throw it out there for the sake of, you know, completeness here, Wisconsin also counts in addition to those two quote unquote good losses, or you know what I mean? And they were back to back weeks, by the way. They were at Michigan and lost 14-7, and then they hosted Ohio State and lost by a touchdown in OT 30-23. But they also count on the resume the impressive win over LSU, number five at the time. Remember they played that one at Lambeau.
That's right.
They were number five at the time, and LSU, of course, just played Alabama to a just a bare knuckle street fight on Saturday in a 10-0 loss. LSU's good. LSU's very good. Do not let their record fool you. Look at what they did against Alabama as evidence. And Wisconsin, you know, counts that win among them. Who else did they take down? Let's see. Nobody else really of very impressive note. Other than Nebraska the week before.
Yeah.
They beat Nebraska before Ohio State did and knocked Nebraska from the rank of the unbeatens at 23-17. Now, what do they have left? They have Illinois, Purdue, and Minnesota. And guess what? They'll be favored big in all three of those.
Should win all three of those.
They're going to win the Big Ten West, and they're going to play either Michigan or Ohio State for the Big Ten championship. And guess what? If they win, I don't care if it's two losses. They're going to be in the playoff.
That's an interesting thing that'll obviously play itself out over the course of the next month or so. We're just under now 1 month away from the conference championship weekend, and that's going to be the interesting thing. The way this is going down, because you know, in just power conferences, as I mentioned, there's four total undefeateds and there's three total one loss teams. So yeah, you get the Wisconsins of the world starting to win those title games a little under a month from now. And that's gonna mess up the entire top four, and it'll be interesting to see, because in theory, the committee wants conference champions. That sort of is how they did it these first couple of years. They more or less indicated they're gonna, as it goes forward, they're gonna look at that as one of their main factors. Where, you know, did you end up winning the conference? And in terms of something else, Bob. The one loss, does Louisville, you were talking about them and their performance. I think they get put under Ohio State. If the committee said what they said last week is to be believed, then they're going to look at who you played. And, yeah, Nebraska far superior to Boston College. So this is just my personal prediction. In terms of after the top four, which are going to be those undefeateds, Washington should be the number four. I will be shocked if it's not them. Then I got five Ohio State and six is Louisville at that point.
Yeah, it's not just who you beat in this last game, though. Certainly a win over Nebraska, 62-3, would weigh more heavily than a 52-7 win over Boston College. But I got to go back up into the earlier parts of the season. And I'm not going to forget 63-20 over the number two ranked team in the country. We talked about this a little bit with Paul Keels last week, and I think with Bill Conley as well, about does where a team is ranked at the time lose its luster later on if it proves to lose more games. And it does to some degree. But I also think that it's a very strong statement about how good the team that beat them was at the time of that high ranking, especially if they pound them. They beat FSU, Florida State, by 43. All right? And they've beaten everybody else by scores that are not even close. They lost a very hard-fought six-point game at Clemson, number five, as we talked about. Then they beat Duke. Then they beat NC State, hammered NC State, the same NC State, by the team, by the way, that missed a chippy 33-yard field goal to beat Clemson last week. Well, a week and a, now 2 weeks ago. And then, of course, they hammered Virginia. Well, they didn't hammer Virginia, actually. They won by seven. Then they hammered Boston College. So, you know, Ohio State probably has a slightly more impressive record in terms of the opponents, but Ohio State has a lot of very, very unimpressive wins, as we mentioned in the month of October. So if we're trying to be objective and fair here in Big Ten slash MAC country, and we will talk about the MAC 2 a little bit later on, if we're trying to be objective and fair, and we always try to look at Ohio State in the best possible light and Michigan in the best possible light, I have to acknowledge that what the Buckeyes did in the month of October, unimpressive wins over Indiana and over Northwestern, and then an overtime win over Wisconsin, and then a very, very ugly loss because of special teams to Penn State, I'm not sure that the eye test tells me Ohio State is better than Louisville. They might be, based if I only look at the game tape from Saturday against Nebraska, because they look like the best team in the country against Nebraska. Look better than Bama. But I'm looking at the last, that's just one of the last five games. If I look at the four games prior to that, I'm thinking that's not one of the four best teams in the country. I could argue that Louisville is one of the four best teams in the country based on their last five games.
And you're not wrong to necessarily do that. You know, the thing that I look at, though, and my question on that would be, because what everything you just said is pretty much true, my only question back would then be, well, then why didn't the committee put Louisville ahead of Ohio State last week?
I don't know. That was one of the mysteries to me, to be honest with you. That was one of the mysteries. And the other people we talked to, too, said the same thing. Why were they all the way down there at seven? It made no sense. I would have had them, well, hell, I would have had them above Texas A&M, who found themselves in the top four.
That's really what threw off the first set of rankings
last week. They're A&M. They're a way better one-loss team than Texas A&M, which we now know, of course. And I think it probably is neck and neck with them and Ohio State as far as the best one-loss teams in the country right now. So a lot of ground to cover there, and I'm really looking forward to covering it as we continue this Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza. We will talk a little bit more about college football, but coming up after the bottom of the hour, Sports Center, we are going to transition a little bit to the NFL because the Lions, and you heard a lot of audio there from Jim Caldwell, Matthew Stafford, somehow finding a way to get it done in overtime with a dirty, nasty Golden Tate flip slash drop kick almost to the Vikings defender in one of the craziest game-ending overtime touchdowns that I think you're ever going to see. Just an unbelievable play. But the Lions snatching victory from the jaws of defeat to move to 5-4 on the season with a win over Minnesota. They got a bye week coming up now. Jacksonville, a very, very winnable game after that. Then a rematch with Minnesota, but this time at home. Then the very
high scoring. On Thanksgiving, don't forget that part.
I'm sorry?
On Thanksgiving for that rematch, by the way.
Thank you. Then they've got a very high scoring, but no defense playing New Orleans Saints team. I'm telling you, things are looking very, very interesting for the boys in Detroit. So we're going to talk a little Lions football with Chris Lemieux coming up here in a few. We'll go to the other side of things and see if the Browns are on track to match the Detroit Lions of 2008, and you know what I'm speaking of, 0-16, the only time in NFL history it's been done. Could the Browns match that? My vote is absolutely they could, and they might even be trying to. So we'll get into that with Maniloff coming up at 4 o'clock. So we got a lot of different things coming your way, most of them football-related, but we do know about the proposed or at least potential fire sale going on with the Tigers. Anthony Fenech is at the GM meetings. We're going to chat with him probably tomorrow after we kind of find out. Cameron Maben is already gone. Who else could be on the block? But primarily football-focused this Monday afternoon right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. As a matter of fact, let's stay on the football focus as I remind you. The Buckeye Store and More, the college and pro superstore, just found out this week only 20%, not 10, 20% store-wide savings on the hundreds of new Nike products in stock for Ohio State at the Buckeye Store and More. They got hundreds of new products arriving daily. It's the largest store in Ohio dedicated to scarlet and gray Buckeye gear. Whether you want to wear it or decorate with it or give it as a gift, you're going to love what you find at the Buckeye Store and More. And if you are not a Buckeye fan, get your maize and blue on, because there's a Wolverines fan zone. There's also a Fighting Irish fan zone, a Spartans fan zone, Rockets, Falcons, and Tigers as well. That's what makes it the Buckeye Store and more. The College and Pro Superstore. It's in Sylvania. Get out there to Starlight Plaza, 5700 Monroe. The Buckeye Store and More. The College and Pro Superstore.
Ticket. Once again, it's the Bob France Extravaganza. ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Indeed it is. As we continue at 3:38, now we're going to shift gears from college football. We'll get, you know, we spent all that time talking about Ohio State, excuse me, their massive win, and of course where things were going to shake out in the top four. We really glossed over Michigan. We really did. We'll get those rankings tomorrow on the CFP. We got to talk about how impressive they were. Maybe it's the opponent and we're just not that impressed because it was Maryland. Maybe it's the fact that Maryland's helmets look like they were designed at the Helen Keller School. I don't know what it is, but those are the most horrific things that I've ever seen in my life. The Maryland football helmets. And that, of course, you know, maybe takes away from the Michigan win, but they looked phenomenal. Their defense really is incredible. Wilton Spate coming into his own in his first year as a starter. Jabril Peppers doing a little bit of everything. So we got to give a little bit more love to Michigan as we continue. But we do want to shift gears and give some love to another team up in that same part of the state of Michigan, and that is the Detroit Lions, who come back. They get a win in overtime against the Minnesota Vikings to move to 5-4 on the season. They're getting some tremendous performances at just the right time from some guys. But they're not all is sunshine and rainbows in the D, because they still have some defensive issues in the D. And they continue. Once again, they have now trailed in every single fourth quarter of 9 football games this season. So they're pulling it out more often than not at 5-4, but that, of course, is a cause for concern as we break it down with Chris Lemieux, our friend from PrideOfDetroit.com, right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. Hey, Chris, how are you?
Still working off the adrenaline from yesterday. This one's hitting a little home a little harder than usual, and thank God for the bye, because I think my managing editor, Jeremy, he's taking it a lot harder than me. He is still listening to, for some reason, we've decided Toto Africa is the song we're using after a victory now. And he's been listening to that on loop for about, what time is it on the West Coast? About 5 hours straight.
You got to give us some backstory there. Why Toto Africa?
Okay, so this is a bit of a Twitter thing, because Twitter is shutting down Vine. Vine is this kind of video service. You have these 7-second looping videos. They're usually used for a bunch of funny things. And we heard it was shutting, Twitter was shutting it down. We went and found our favorite vines out of there, and mine was, it's this video of a Shiba Inu, a Japanese dog, and it does this thing with its feet where it looks like it's dancing with its feet, and someone set that to Toto's Africa, the riff, da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and we just played that for a good hour.
Hang on a second, I'm not sure I know the song that well. Can you do that again? Oh my God, you did it.
Yeah. So we laugh at that, and then a week later we're doing our preview podcast, First Bite, and my guy Ryan turns to me and is like, you know, you got this really cool like electronic rock music, but can we put Toto Africa as our intro music? I'm like, sure, why not? And then fast forward, 72 hours later to Sunday, and there it is again. It's Africa. We're just all listening to Africa. It's Africa. We want to find a way to get the Lions to recognize it, so that it kind of becomes a Lions version of, you know how the Red Wings always play that Journey song?
Yeah.
Yeah, we want them to play Toto Africa.
Which Journey song is that?
I don't remember the name off the top of my head.
How does
I just
it
know,
go?
Born and raised in South Detroit.
You mean Don't Stop Believin'?
Yes, that. Thank you. Thank you.
That's the one.
I can only remember the intro now. Sports has broken my brain because of it. I've been on an 80s music kick. This is fantastic.
I just find it awesome that you can do that. you can give us the beat. You can give us the lyric. You don't know the name all the time, but
yeah, I've been listening to. Oh no!
All right, let's go, Chris Lemieux. Do your thing.
All right, I don't know the lyrics at all. We just know the riff. I swear to God, every time I'm on with you, Bob, we end up talking about 80s music, and I just become your little monkey here dancing for you.
Yeah, but it's fun. That's all that matters.
It is great. It's great.
Now, come on, give us some.
echoing tonight. I barely know the lyrics.
You barely know the lyrics, but you've made the song for the Lions?
I know the refrain pretty well, but I know the music video very well too, a very gorgeous librarian in there, but yeah.
I have no idea what the video looks like. And I probably watched it the first time it was on, watching MTV in the 1980s. Oh, my God.
That was, 82? Yeah, yeah.
I don't even know what year it was, but I just know I was all into it back in that time.
Yeah.
I was into this song, this band, virtually all of it, and that was when MTV was born. So seeing a little mini movie set to music, that's what videos were. It was pretty incredible.
You said you know
the lyrics. I mean,
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay, I don't know this part. Here we go.
You know
there's nothing
full well.
That 100 more and more can do.
You know the lyrics damn well. You just don't want us to record
you. Africa, gonna take the time to do things we never did.
Hey,
I'm 30, by the way. My life's going downhill
right
from
here.
There. Yeah, I know.
What was
seriously.
That, Kush?
This is high-quality radio right here.
Oh, my goodness. Hold on. Let me check the other line real quick here. I think I got another call on the other line. I do.
Oh, it's no.
I got a call on the other line, actually. It's the Detroit Lions. They have a message for you.
Oh, no.
That's what they think of your music.
Oh, man.
Oh, your music acumen and your da-da-da-da, whatever the hell you just did. Oh,
God. Sorry.
All right. Now that we got all the fun stuff out of the way, let's talk about more fun stuff. How about how Golden Tate finishes overtime games?
Oh, my God, yes.
I mean, what made it so amazing, it wasn't the most amazing thing that I've ever seen because I remember it was either last year or the year before in a Steelers-Browns game, Antonio Brown did a complete front flip into the end zone off of, I want to say, was it a punt return for a touchdown maybe?
Oh man, it might have been a kickoff. I know what you're talking about.
Yeah,
it's not
and it was.
In my
I
memory.
Mean, it was perfectly executed. It was Mary Lou Retton-esque. It was,
yes.
Or if you want to be more modern, what's the girl's name who set the gymnastics world on fire?
Briles. Yeah.
Simone Briles, I think maybe.
Yes, Simone. I remember Simone. Yeah.
Anyway, that's what it looked. I mean, it looked like a gymnast. It was perfect.
Yeah,
and it was
yeah.
a front flip, and he stuck the landing, and it was just like, wow, insult to injury. But Golden Tate did that with a twist because there was a defender coming, and as he did his flip, he swung his legs around in almost like a WWE drop kick to the chest and kicked the defender out of bounds as he landed in the end zone with a game-winning touchdown. It was just filthy what he did to that guy.
Yeah, let me defend my boy Golden Tate here. I've actually spoken with Golden Tate. We've done an interview with him. And I will even say, and it's funny because between that and what he said after the press later, it's like he says, I don't even remember that. And it's like either you're a great liar, Golden Tate, or you literally like your brain does just shut off and it just lets you do these crazy things like you've got this Jekyll and Hyde thing. But I would say, A, that's probably not even the craziest thing I've seen Golden Tate do. He dove into the Michigan State band when he was back at Notre Dame.
Wow.
Very, very famous. Yeah, like he grabbed a touchdown and just he didn't stop. He just he was going up to the band and he just leapt up and kind of like put his arms out like he was going to fly and just dove right into the band. There's videos out there. It's fantastic.
He's a different kind of cat, man.
He's
in
great.
His head. People have known that for a long time. But,
yeah,
you know,
but
and it's
I would say
it's fun when you're winning to, you know, for those kind of things to come out. There are times last year, and I can't remember the specifics. Kush, maybe you do, and maybe you even do, Chris. But there were some things that happened last year where it was a little bit of Golden Tate off the wall type stuff that didn't play very well because they weren't winning. And if you're winning, he's a fun guy to have around.
Yeah, I mean, it's just who he is, right? There's just some guys out there who play with their emotions on the shoulders. Eric Ebron's another one of those type of guys. He gets a lot of flack for it, but I mean, he plays the game so hard. I remember, I think Ebron had like an 8-yard catch and he was like beating the ground because he didn't go further. They're just guys who play with that kind of passion to it. But I want to go back and defend though that Golden Tate flip into the end zone because, that was all on Sudeo.
I don't think you need to, by the way. I don't think anybody's attacking it. We love it.
But the idea that he did that to Sudeo sought that out. Sudeo's out there with a lunch pail. Sudeo's out here like the bumbling second in command lieutenant for some hackneyed Saturday cartoon villain who's like, yes, master, I will go after him. I will play hard. I will play gritty. I will play the final bell. And he ran right at Golden Tate, hoping to make a play. And for his troubles, he got that. He got a face of that.
Yeah, he really did. He got a face full of Golden Tate's legs. Like I said, it was almost
Golden
like a
Tate.
Drop kick. But it just spun around, so it was a little bit different. Almost a little Rey Mysterio-like on the 619 or whatever the hell.
Oh, yeah, yeah. No, 619, he like grabs the ropes and like swings between
around
them
and kicks him with like
that's
the front
kinda
of
like,
both legs.
Yeah, I don't remember the exact word. I want to. It's not an enziguri, but...
I don't know what it is, but my God, it was awesome and it was great to see. Now, what's the takeaway from the win? I mean, it's an amazing thing. You still have to look at the fact that defensively there are still lapses, second half issues. They trailed again in the fourth quarter for the ninth consecutive game, but yet they came out on top of this one. So what's the takeaway of the win over a team that had been kind of being crowned division champion when they were 5-0 without Teddy Bridgewater and without Adrian Peterson with a great defense? And now, of course, they've lost three in a row, and the Lions are right in the thick of the division.
Well, I know they are getting, from what we talked about, we talked with our sister site Daily Norseman before the game, they're getting pretty banged up when it comes to the Vikings. And it was a good matchup for the Lions defense that day, too. That offensive line was very, very flimsy that they have, and that's kind of been like the source of their woes running it on the ground, is that their offensive line just can't get them any lanes there. I think, what was it, Kerry Hyder had a bunch of sacks this game, and there was that one sequence where between penalties and what the defense did, the Vikings defense had picked off Matt Stafford, they were in the red zone, and they ended up on the drive punting it. But other than that, this defense, it's still the defense we know and love, right? With the Lions, it's still the defense that just, they're made of paper mache. They can't stop anything. They just really, I mean, they're good against the run, but granted, that was about it. But Sam Bradford, all he had to realize is like, oh, hey, wait, I have Kyle Rudolph. I have Stephon Diggs and I have Pat Shurmur, who has decided to start going to a West Coast offense, which means shorter passing routes. So what does that mean? It means right there in the heart of the Lions' weakness, which is the middle of the field defense. And, that's what you get. But it's also why the Lions keep having these close games, I'm sure, with a acceptable defense. And to be honest, too, like this offense has been very jittery and stop and go at a lot of times, too. And it's left the defense out on the field for a lot longer than it needs to be, too, right? So those two qualities together just make it so that your defense is not only bad, but it's also tired. And, eventually it's bend and try not to break too much.
Yeah, and they have done exactly that. They're 5-4 right now. Let me ask you this, and I know Kush wants to get in here too, but just let me do this, because when I mentioned that they're right in the thick of the division, they are in a horrific division. And I was going to say that, but then I paused. I'm thinking – most of the divisions are. I mean, the Vikings are 5-3, played one fewer game because they had their bye. The Lions are about to have their bye. They're 5-4. The Packers are 4-4. I'm looking at the AFC North, where the Ravens and Steelers are both 4-4. At the top of the division, the Bengals at 3-4-1 are right there. And then there's the Browns at 0-9. There's only, if I count this correctly, four teams out of 32 in the league with two losses or fewer going into week number 10.
Let
me run them down.
Okay.
The 7-1 Patriots, just because I want to make sure I'm right. The 7-1 Patriots, the 7-1 Cowboys. Then you have the two loss teams in the west of the AFC, the Raiders and the Chiefs. And that's four. And I think that's it. I don't count Seattle because they're 14-1.
Oh, you got Cowboys.
I said the Cowboys. That was right after.
Oh, okay. Okay. I missed that. Yeah.
New England and Dallas are both 7-1. Then you have the two 6-2 teams in the AFC West, Oakland and Kansas City. I'm sorry, 7-2 and 6-2, Oakland and Kansas City, respectively. And then I don't count Seattle at 4-2-1 because to me a tie is a loss. The hell with it. You didn't win the game, then you don't get. Then it's a loss for you. But they're 4-2-1. But there's only four teams clean that have two losses or less. This is parity at its utmost, and to me, I don't like it. I really don't like all of these 500 or barely over 500 teams leading divisions. What are your thoughts on that?
I don't know what to make of it, because at one point it's like, oh my God, the Lions are suddenly in second place in the NFC North. And if the Vikings lose to Washington while the Detroit's on a bye, they will have top place in the North, because they'll have that, the tiebreaker. But, like, yeah, I mean, just, I mean, you kind of even left out the Falcons. I think the Falcons are clear in the NFC South. I don't see New Orleans really overtaking.
But they only have a one-game lead in the loss column.
Sure.
Right? They're 6-3, and New Orleans is 4-4.
Oh, in the division. Yeah. I mean, man, it's just, we were discussing this, too, and I wrote an article today about why the Lions, at the very least, this is probably the football that the NFL wants on TV, because at least in a vacuum, it's exciting, it's thrilling, it's a defense that won't hold anyone, but it's also a Matt Stafford who can come back and tie it when they have like a 0.1% chance to do anything but lose. But at the same time too, yeah, it's like, I mean, you're just looking around the landscape of this league, and it's always folly to kind of do these early, because things change really in a hurry down the stretch. And, you know, there can be losing streaks like we've seen with the Vikings, sure, where they just get derailed. And, of course, you know, the playoffs, it's one and done, so it's absolutely random. But it's just like, you just feel like you're penciling in the Patriots and, I don't know who from the NFC, probably the Cowboys.
The Cowboys clearly, so far and away to me, yeah, they have proven to be thus far with a rookie quarterback in the fourth round. They're the best
team. And I'm sure that would make fantastic ratings, because – you know, the national media loves teams like New England and Philadelphia and Dallas.
Well, don't forget what happened last night on primetime Sunday night. The Oakland,
sure,
Raiders look like this is not a joke. This isn't a fluke. This isn't a silly thing. The Raiders might be back. They might be the second best team. In fact, I think they probably are the second,
yeah,
best team in the AFC. And can you imagine? It's like we get into a time capsule and go back to 1977
or
something.
Oh, the Tuck Rule.
Where
the
it's,
Tuck Rule.
Well, I'm going further than that. I'm going back, like,
okay,
I said, to the 70s of the Raiders' glory years. You know, and it's a Raiders-Cowboys type of Super Bowl? Are you kidding me? That would be like...
Oh, that would be great.
And it would be like Madden versus Landry. They never met, by the way, those
it
two.
It would be a little, though, a little bittersweet, because it's pretty much the end of the Raiders in Oakland.
That's
like,
true.
Even on Sunday night, they kept finding all those poor sods in the crowd, like, saying, please stay in Oakland, and these, you know,
you
Al Davis'
Super Bowl, win a Super Bowl, and then the parade is held in Vegas.
Hey, that practically happened
that
already
awful.
When they won the Super Bowl in 80. They were gone in a year.
That's true. When they went to LA.
Yeah,
but then, of course, they get them back, and then to lose them again. I mean, no fan base deserves that. But anyway,
Jimmy, go ahead, get
in there.
You know, that the counter side to what you guys are talking about, Bob, when you're bringing up some of this parity with some of these teams, you know, all over the place, especially after you get past the 1-2 lost teams, it means I'm finally going to broach this subject, guys. The Lions are 5-4. Chris, you just mentioned that if the Vikings lose to Washington, the Lions on bye, they would then have the tiebreaker for the division. They're also the first team out in terms of wild cards. Washington is 4-3-1. Giants are 5-3. And then you got a lot of 4-4 and below. The Cardinals aren't what we thought they might be. The Eagles have taken steps back after their decent start with their rookie quarterback. Still don't know what to make overall of Aaron Rodgers and Green Bay.
Something's wrong.
Yeah. Exactly.
Rodney Harrison was saying, like, Stafford's now the best quarterback in the NFC North.
That's crazy.
Sunday football. Yeah.
That's crazy,
but I can buy it, too.
Yeah.
Just on how Rodgers is playing right now.
So the long and short point I'm trying to ask is, we're 9 games in for the Detroit Lions. They are right there for a division and a wild card. How likely is it that they can actually make the playoffs given the landscape of the NFC right now?
Well, now that you said
it's
it out loud,
form,
not likely
it's
at all.
It's got to be as a division champion, not as a wild card.
Yeah.
It's got to be.
Yeah, well, the division's right there. The division's right there for the taking, which means that horrible things are going to happen if Lions history is to hold up. But I think I said this last time I was on with you, too. Like, I have no clue how this last slate. Like, we can talk about the next 3 games. You could probably go 2-3 there. Maybe the Vikings, they're going to get a better kicker. Like, this game was decided because Blair Walsh had a blocked field goal and a missed extra point, really. But, like, I mean, because this team is so flawed, it is so skewed to one side where you have this stellar quarterback who can get you down the field in 20 seconds. But then, other than that, the offense starts and sputters, and the defense, like, I'm just imagining what Blake Bortles will do to this team when they resume play. But, you know, thankfully they're also getting healthy at the right time, too. They're going to have a lot of people back in the bye. It's going to really hinge on whether they get DeAndre Levy back, who's been out since week 1. But, like, yeah, health is coming around at the right time. And that makes you hopeful. But what doesn't make you hopeful is the fact that I've seen this team do this a lot of times, and I'm not fatalistic, but at the same time, too, just because of how unpredictable this team is, I have no clue how the last seven games are going to go. No clue at all.
Every I'm with you, Chris. Every time you think you have a beat on them and a reason to be optimistic, they just do some terrible things and lose two or three in a row or lose three out of four or something, and you're like, what in the world? Sometimes it's best just to go ahead and expect the worst and then be surprised, pleasantly surprised, if they don't give you the worst and suddenly they're on a winning streak. Because that's what this team does. Three-game losing streak, three-game winning streak. Now it's a loss, now a win. Just kind of expect the unexpected with the Lions and then hope that it ends up on the upswing and you end up in the division.
I will say this as a last note.
Yeah.
It may very well come down to New Year's Day, Ford Field, Packers, Lions for the division, and that is an incredibly scary game. That is a prospect that should send chills down the spines of every Lions fan. But if you can exercise that demon, Packers, Lions for the division, or at the very least your wild card, I don't know what I would do with myself. I don't know if I would be ready for the playoffs.
Well, then we'll find out who the best quarterback in the NFC North is.
Absolutely.
The difference being, of course, that Aaron Rodgers would be going up against a defense that you described as paper mache, and that's how he might get well in a hurry. Chris Lemieux, PrideofDetroit.com. Check him out there. Chris, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
Take care, Bob.
You got it. All right, hey, before we get to the top of the hour SportsCenter, let's get another qualifier for the National Championship Flyaway Contest that ends tomorrow. Tomorrow is our last drawing that we will qualify for the drawing. And what you can win is a trip to Tampa, Florida for two, round-trip airfare, a four-night hotel stay, two upper-level tickets to the game, rental car with parking, and a tour of the Yuengling Brewery in Tampa. That's a $5,000 prize package for the national championship game on January 9th. Runner-up is a trip for two to the Ohio State-Michigan game coming up November 26th. It's coming up fast, by the way. At the Horseshoe in Columbus with limo service. Third place wins a prize package from Yuengling. To qualify, register as the fifth caller right now to 866-240-1065, 866-240-1065. If you don't qualify on the radio, you can do so online at 1065theticket.com up to once a day. Good luck. Hopefully we'll say congratulations to you. From Yuengling Lager, Yark Chrysler, Jeep Dodge Ram, Country Heart Fireplaces and Stoves, Allegiant Air, Toledo Express Airport, Total Image Limousine, and Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Going to continue the NFL discussion with Dennis Manilow, who will talk about the worst team in all of professional sports. Manilow joins us coming up after this on The Ticket.
Barrett gets the snap. Barrett feeds it to Weber, sweeping left side to the Nebraska. 25-20, 15-10, 5, takes it to the end zone for the score. Mike Weber shucked a defender on his way to 6 points, and it's 20-3 Ohio State on Mike Weber's seventh touchdown run of the year. Snap to JT Barrett, fakes the handoff, looks to throw, sends Ed Ball deep down the middle of the field. Curtis Samuel got it to the Nebraska 35, still going at the 20. Curtis Samuel weaving his way to the 10, to the 5, and into the end zone for a touchdown. First play, second half, JT Barrett 75 yards in the air to Curtis Samuel, who got behind safety Aaron Williams, 37-3 Buckeyes.
It's a top-10 team, very talented team that, our only loss is overtime to Wisconsin. So our guys played well, and, the quarterback got hurt, but I understand he's going to be okay, and we wish him well, and just very pleased with our effort. Very pleased with our passing attack, and also we did just all-around very good performance.
Hash mark right side, spot down, kick away, blocked. It is blocked, and it's picked up by the Lions. Down the left sideline, Glover quick. Glover inside the 50, inside the 45. It's spinning down to the Viking 42-yard line. How big is that?
Prater from 58. There's the snap. Spot. Kick on the way. It is good. He got it. Matt Prater sent it through from 58 yards out. We're still playing football. How about that?
If they come up empty from here, it would be about a 46-yard field goal. Stafford checks his protection. He'll work out of the gun. Play clock at 3. Matthews got it back. Sets, looks, throws. He's got Golden Tate, who makes the catch. Inside the 15. Inside the 10. And he's biking away. He's into the end zone. Pack the bags. Start the plane. This game is over. What a comeback by the Lions. Golden Tate caught it, spun, and
found pay dirt.
You know, all in all, I mean, just in terms of our guys hanging in there when things are a little tough, they've done it well. The offense, when you needed them to move it down and get in position to score, they were able to do so. Did it with poise and did it with a little bit of flair. That was, 20 whatever seconds it was left and no timeouts. Those guys work at it.
Didn't work out that way. Our guys did a heck of a job all just sticking together. Can't say enough about our special teams unit. Drive at the end of the game, and our kicker doesn't make an unbelievable kick. We're feeling a whole lot different than we are right now. Just super savvy move, winning the coin toss in overtime and getting the ball and never giving it back. So it was good. We were able to kind of get out of our own way in the fourth quarter, convert some third and longs. Oh, that's a huge one. That's a really good football team we just played. A really, really good one, and their defense is fantastic. You know, to come into their place and get a win, you know, first one in the division this year is a good one.
You know, there's some things I know we can do better and we will do better. There's things that just keep rearing its ugly head. So we just got to get it right, and I get it, and we'll keep fighting. Again, it starts with me. I want to make sure everybody understands that. I mean, it starts with me getting everybody involved in this organization and do things right. But again, we got to slow the run down, and we got to make sure that, we control the other team's a better player. We just got to get better in some areas.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
The extravaganza does indeed continue right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket. We are Toledo's sports leader. An amazing comeback win by the Detroit Lions yesterday, an overtime win. Golden Tate with one of the most incredible finishes, game-ending overtime touchdowns that you're ever going to see. A leap slash insiguri slash drop kick on his way to the end zone. Unbelievable. They're 5-4. Meanwhile, the Cleveland Browns continue to chase the Detroit Lions. And I don't mean in the standings. I mean trying to match the 2008 0-16 Detroit Lions with the 2016 0-16 Cleveland Browns.
Prescott throws to a wide open Whitman. He will tiptoe into the end zone. A touchdown to the Dallas Cowboys.
The Cowboys treated the Browns yesterday like Ohio State treated Nebraska, like they were just a team to be toyed with. You just kind of play around with them a little bit. You maybe bat them a little bit like a cat with a little, a catnip-filled mouse. You just kind of play with it and screw around. You can do whatever you want to it. That's how it looked. I mean, men among boys, or as one headline I read today, boys, in other words, apostrophe boys for Cowboys, among boys, literal boys, with the Cleveland Browns. Joining us now from Cleveland to talk about that side of the NFL is our good friend Dennis Maniloff, writer for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and also an author of From A to Z, Andrews to Zastadil, Dennis Maniloff's favorite Plain Dealer interviews. D-Man, what's going on, brother? How are you?
First of all, how about those Lions, Bob France? You know what? I love Matthew Stafford. I've told you that before. Yet another comeback for him. And Golden Tate is right up there now among my favorite NFL players. To finish a game like that is absolutely hilarious. I loved every second of it.
I'll tell you what, they are a very, very exciting team in the fourth quarter, in part because of what Matthew Stafford can do in the clutch. He has become one of the NFL's better quarterbacks, period, but he is certainly one of the best in the NFL, top five, when it comes to making plays at the end of games, needing game-winning drives. He's got a clutch gene that really has evolved over his last few years in Detroit, and in this league. So their games are exciting that the Lions are in because of that, but also because on the flip side, their defense really doesn't stop anybody when they need to in the fourth quarter. It's why they're only a game over 500, but it does lead to some incredible, fantastic finishes.
I hope, Bob, that before his career is over, Stafford in his Lions, presumably, can win some games in the playoffs so he doesn't go down as one of the more underrated quarterbacks of his era, because he really is a terrific player. He just doesn't get as much appreciation. And part of it is because his teams haven't been that great.
Yeah, you got to win a playoff game. You got to win a playoff game or two or three, and you got to make a few playoff appearances before you're going to start to get that kind of, that kind of recognition. You know, it's not too terribly dissimilar from Matt Ryan, Matty Ice in Atlanta, who's put up big numbers in his time in the league, but really, is kind of still considered a step below the Bradys and the Rodgers and the, the Roethlisbergers and those kinds of guys in this league, because he hasn't done, he hasn't won in the playoffs. He hasn't been there consistently. So I think Matthew and Matt are both kind of in the same boat. And Matthew Stafford might be on the verge of getting out of that, because we talked about this before you came on, Dennis. The parity in the National Football League right now is thick. And in the NFC North, we're just talking about, you know, 500 teams. You know, you got 5-3 Minnesota, 5-4 Detroit, 4-4 Green Bay. They're right in the thick of this thing to win that division.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Bob. There's plenty of mediocrity / parity, and then there's the Cleveland Browns.
Well, and you
they know, are in a the Browns are in a class all by themselves. They completely missed the parity bus.
No doubt about it. And you know what's really strange is they're in the most parity ridden division in the league. Maybe one of the worst divisions in the league. Nobody would have thought that coming in, but there they are. You know, two teams sharing the top spot at 500. How much more parity-ridden does it get than that? And then Cincinnati at 3-4. And the Browns can't even find a way to creep into the discussion at a time when their division is about as bad as their division really will ever get. And they're sitting there at 0-9 threatening to run the table in reverse.
Yeah, Bob, and listen, you know, I'm firmly behind Hugh Jackson still. I think he needs to be given years, and that's plural. Hopefully Haslam will be patient. I do think Jackson's the right guy. However, that being said, when you watch or are forced to watch what took place yesterday in week 9 of the season, this is not week 1 or week 3, this is week 9, against a team that's got a bunch of young players too, by the way. All right, they play like veterans, but they're young. So don't sit here and tell me, oh, you lost, you know, you got your brains beat in by a veteran group. To see the way the Browns played, the way they were outclassed, specifically on the defensive side, I don't blame some people for wondering, okay, are these the type of games where you start to doubt the process? You start to wonder. Are we going to see light at the end of this tunnel?
You know, Dennis, it's a very interesting point you raise. When I look at the league's worst team, and when I look at the team that I believe, the franchise that I think is the worst in all of North American professional sports, and that includes the Philadelphia 76ers in the basketball world, I see a team that I do lose faith in the process. I do lose faith because every time they play somebody, it seems like they're playing somebody who's killing them that they had an opportunity to get, and they didn't because they wasted all of the golden opportunities they've been given. Somebody I talked to yesterday, just a friend, said this team is worse than the 99 expansion team. And I said, maybe, maybe not. I think there was less talent on that 99 expansion team. But there should have been. It was an expansion team. They got to draft, you know, fill their roster with everybody else's throwaways and don't wants. This team has had, what, 8 first-round draft picks in the last 4 years? They're averaging around 2 a year. And every day, they're playing a Dak Prescott that they didn't take. They're playing an Ezekiel Elliott they didn't take. They're playing a Carson Wentz they didn't take. They're playing a Derek Carr they didn't take. They're playing a Khalil Mack that they didn't take. And they took Justin Gilbert and Johnny Manziel and Trent Richardson instead. God in heaven, they've had an opportunity to build something by now. So why should anybody, if you're a Browns fan, Dennis, trust, quote, the process?
Well, it's simply because, and I hear you, Bob, I do, but the reason would be because Jackson and his crew have not been entrenched long enough to be held accountable for the misses that you chronicled. You know, they haven't had the opportunities to blow the dress. You just have to hope that they get, you know, their picks right. Now, granted, I mean, you know, they've had, what, one draft so far under their purview? And, you know, we're not exactly seeing Boku returns. I mean, granted, they are getting some production out of Kessler. And here's the thing. Yes, the Browns could have had both Elliott and Prescott. But, of course, the counter is Elliott and Prescott on this roster with this group in this state of the build would look nowhere near as good as they look on the, you know, the Dallas team that has a seasoned offensive line, has a terrific, you know, offensive line. So yes, you can run that excuse out there or that rationalization, but I totally get where observers say, you know, here they go again. You know, here go the same old Browns, not only losing, but losing badly. Why are we supposed to believe that this time is going to be different? I get where that's coming from. Because, again, when you see a defensive performance, and I use performance in quotes, like you did yesterday from the Browns. That was straight up terrible. I mean, they were outclassed in every way, blown assignments, missed tackles, neutral zone infractions on back-to-back plays. Okay? I mean, this is the stuff that, you know, you need the yakety sacks for, okay? And that's embarrassing stuff. And Hugh Jackson is really going to be tested here in the final few weeks to try to get this team playing more competitive.
You know, we're talking to Dennis Maniloff, who covers the Cleveland Browns for and much more out in Cleveland for the Cleveland Plain Dealer and the Northeast Ohio Media Group, also an accomplished author. His book, From A to Z, Andrews to Zastadil, you should pick up at Amazon.com or wherever it is that you can. Because, Dennis, the problem is that there doesn't look to be pride. When you see a defensive performance like that, what you want to be able to say each week that you're losing if you're 0-9 is, boy, these guys are gritty. Boy, they play hard. They play like they know they want to win. They are something that they're buying into from Hugh Jackson and from their coaching staff and from the front office and the process, et cetera. And it's not going to be long. And boy, when it turns around, it's going to turn around big. You want to see that. And while I've seen glimpses of that from time to time in this 0-9 start, what I saw yesterday was no pride. Nobody buying in, nobody feeling like, hey, we're getting close. That's a very good team we just played, but we're getting close. You saw a performance in which it looked like guys really didn't have a whole lot of interest in being where they were. You saw a performance of guys that looked like they wanted to be someplace else. And that's the problem. Are they buying? I like you too, and I'm with you. Do not upset this thing and start it over again after the last 5, 6, 7, 8, 9 years of this garbage. But I need to know that they're buying into Hugh and that they're playing hard for Hugh, and it didn't look like they were, at least on this particular Sunday.
Yeah, far from me about to ever say that an NFL player is laying down or whatnot. It just
I'm not saying they're laying
it.
Down. I mean, I'm not saying they're Jacob. Right. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying they don't seem to be playing with the passion that that a player who is inspired by a coach plays with. That's all.
That's true. And it certainly looks bad. I mean, it really does. It's a bad visual. Hugh Jackson admitted as much. Basically, he said there was nothing good to come out of Sunday. I gave Cody Kessler a B, as in boy, for a decent performance against the Cowboys. The problem is he barely had anything to do because the defense helped allow the Cowboys to be on the field for 39 minutes and 30 seconds or thereabouts. Almost 40 minutes of possession time. So Kessler didn't get an opportunity to do much, the time that he was in. He was functional, but, this team really has to figure out how to be competitive. And I know that they were competitive earlier in the season, against certain teams, and they could have won a few games, and that would have helped if they wouldn't, they didn't have this 0-9 anvil hanging around their neck. It could have been, 2-7, and they wouldn't have had this potential to go 0-4 for the season. But Thursday is going to be a great test to me, okay? Browns coming off of an embarrassing loss to the Cowboys, short week. They go to Baltimore. Baltimore suddenly playing well. Its defense is fired up. The prescription is, or the thought is, the Browns are going to go in there and get their doors blown off. Let's see if they've got pride, like you say, and can they play the Ravens tough? It'll be an interesting test.
I'm not asking you to be negative, but I am asking, when we talk about the potential for 0-16, it has only happened once in NFL history. It was 8 years ago by the Detroit Lions, ironically enough. But I'm looking at Baltimore, Pittsburgh, Giants, bye week, Cincy, Buffalo, San Diego, Pittsburgh. I'm trying to find a win. Trying to find a, hey, that's where they – I thought I had it with New York, with the Jets. Didn't work. Knew I wasn't going to be there with Dallas. Most of what I saw earlier, I thought maybe Tennessee. But looking at the remaining seven, is there a win in that group right now as you look at it, Dennis Maniloff?
Bob, if the defense doesn't figure it out, no. There's no doubt in my mind that this defense will drag this team to 0-16. If things don't change, if they don't suddenly figure it out. And again, somebody says to me, oh, well, don't you realize it? The Dallas Cowboys, well-oiled machine, tremendous offense. Yes, Yes, I know they're capable of making other teams look bad. But I'm talking about a season's worth, not just the Dallas game. 9 games worth of missed tackles, blown assignments, mental mistakes, stupid penalties. If this team doesn't improve defensively, you're looking at 0-16.
Dennis, a couple of other NFL thoughts before you go, as we are past the midway point now. Well, everybody has played at least 8. You know, many teams have played 9 now. The byes are obviously staggered. But so we'll call this the midpoint and ask you for a couple of midseason awards. Who is the rookie of the year thus far in the National Football League? I'm going to assume that person wears a star on the side of their helmet. The question is which guy?
Yeah, that's a great point. My easy answer, my quick answer would be Ezekiel Elliott, but honestly, I'm going with Dak Prescott, okay? When you talk about the fact that he's a quarterback, it is the premier position, arguably, in all of professional sports, the amount of responsibility that comes with not only being a quarterback, but being a quarterback of the Dallas Cowboys, and to have the Cowboys at 7-1 with 7 straight wins, could have been almost 8-0. This guy has been tremendous, and yes, Elliott's numbers are fantastic, but I would give it to Prescott right now because of the amount of responsibility that comes with being a quarterback.
If you're Jason Garrett, does Romo get his job back?
Oh, goodness, no. Bob, that's a freaking, I mean, come on, Bob. I mean, you know. Listen,
well,
I get
know,
the whole...
I do know, but hold on. You know, you're assuming, or maybe you're assuming, when you ask that answer that question so incredulously, you're assuming that they don't lose again. But I cannot believe they're going to go 15-1. So what I'm saying is at some point, you know, the Cowboys are going to lose. And at some point, Dak Prescott is going to come back down to earth, as every rookie, I don't care how good you are, as every rookie
right.
always has. Look at the number of picks that Peyton Manning and Dan Marino threw in their rookie years. Troy Aikman was 1-15. This guy isn't going to be God. Sooner or later, he's going to have a clunker. He's going to throw 2 or 3 picks. They're going to lose a game, maybe 2 out of 4, something like that. And then the question is going to be, now that we approach playoff time, can we really trust the rookie, who's been so solid, to carry us into a playoffs in which we're the favorites in the NFC? Or do we go back to the guy that's been one of the top, you know, 8, 9, 10 quarterbacks in this league for a decade?
Yeah, I wasn't reacting incredulously because I doubted the validity of your question. I was just simply saying I was reacting as an emphatic no. I stick with Prescott regardless of whether there's some bumps in the road here. I've seen enough. I've watched 4 full Dallas games now. And I've seen enough to believe that if this guy makes mistakes and throws some picks and, you know, is partly responsible for a loss here or there, it's not because he's drowning. It's not because he's going to be overwhelmed by what's happening. It'll just be because he failed to execute in certain spots. And as a result, I'm not worried about his lack of experience. I'm saying that he's playing like a veteran. He will continue to play like a veteran, perhaps a veteran who makes mistakes. But it's not going to be because you have to take him out all of a sudden because the bubble burst. I stick with Prescott. I ride him as long as possible, and that would mean all the way through the end of the season and into the playoffs, and just have Romo ready to go in case Prescott were to get hurt.
Do you think anybody else in the league would be in that same situation? I mean, when we're talking about a quality quarterback like Tony Romo. In other words, if Andrew Luck had gone down in the way Romo did and had to miss 8 weeks, 9 weeks, and a Dak Prescott came in and did this, do you think the Colts stay with Prescott or go back to their franchise guy? Say the same thing in Pittsburgh. You know, they've needed a backup to Roethlisberger for years because he always misses 2, 3, 4 games with some injury or another because of the hits he takes. Or do you think this is just Tony Romo related? I'm just wondering how many other guys, would lose their job to injury, which is essentially what it is. You got a top flight quarterback, a franchise guy with a multi-million-dollar contract, who essentially would be losing his job to injury, which most observers kind of frown upon in pro sports.
Yeah, that's a great question to ask, Bob, and I just think that Prescott passes so many tests, including, of course, the all-important eye test.
Sure.
Where you don't even need the stats to recognize that this guy can play at the highest level. So I don't know what the answer to that would be. You know, I don't even know, for example, I don't even know who, like, Philip Rivers' backup is, for example. Okay, Rivers were to go down for a while, and all of a sudden, you know, the Chargers' backup comes in and lights the world on fire. Does Rivers lose his job?
Well, you know, let's do Detroit, since you're a big fan of Matthew Stafford, right?
Okay.
You know, and he's the franchise guy in Detroit in the same way that Tony Romo has been for Dallas. A little younger than Romo, but a guy's been in the league a long time. He's really elevated his play, too. But if he goes down, let's just say he goes down in the first week the way Romo did, and here comes, you know, Dak Prescott instead of Dan Orlovsky. It's Dak Prescott, and they go 7-1 without Stafford. 8-1.
Yeah.
And now Matthew's healthy. Clean bill of health here. What do you do if you're Jim Caldwell? Do you still ride this kid? Or do you say, hey, man, Matthew Stafford got hurt. He didn't do anything to lose his job. He's back and healthy, and he gets his job back. What do you think would happen?
Yeah, that's a great question again. Same, it is. It really is a tough one. Because, and I don't want to sound like a hypocrite and say, well, because I like Stafford so much, definitely put Stafford back in. You know, I have to be real about it. If Prescott were to do the same type of things that he's doing with the Cowboys in the same role with the Lions, if Stafford had gone down, I guess I probably would say stick with Prescott and deal with what you're dealing with at the end of the year, just because I love the hot hand, and it's not just the hot hand. I don't think this is a fluky thing. That's my main point about Prescott. I don't think he's a guy who just benefited from a favorable matchup for a week, or he was hot for 2 weeks. I mean, this is a guy who has aced pretty much half of an NFL season. So I don't look at it as a fluke. I'm looking at this as a guy who simply sees the opportunity and is in charge of an offense that's on fire. Why upset the apple cart?
Yeah, I get it. And by the way, my question was with no definitive answer in mind. I can't answer it either. I don't know what I would do if I was in a Stafford-like situation like the hypothetical I just threw at you, but it makes for fascinating conversation because we just haven't seen anything quite like this scenario in some time. I don't know, maybe ever. The last time I can remember a situation where a rookie fourth-round pick started the way this kid has started in replacing, you know, a guy who's still a franchise guy. You know, in his city, with that big contract that Romo has. A couple more quickies just on the league. The Raiders, are they the second best team in the AFC? And do you think they could, by the time it's done, be the best team in the AFC and go to the Super Bowl?
I loved what I saw from the Raiders last night, Bob. I watched almost every play of that game, and you know that offense looked good. Derek Carr looked tremendous. They're physical. They're fast. On the offensive side, they got those big-bodied receivers. Murray was hitting the holes hard as a running back. They got scat backs. You know, their line is enormous. And then, you know, defensively, they get after it with Mack and Bruce Irvin and the gang. I really like the Oakland Raiders. And I'm far from me, after watching last night, to doubt them at all, because that was a display that they put on against the Broncos.
Last thing, D-Man, who is your MVP of the half year thus far? And just to throw a few names at you, and they're almost always quarterbacks at the top of the list, so let's just throw it at you. Matt Ryan has a quarterback rating of 119. He's thrown 23 touchdowns, 4 picks. He's got almost 3,000 yards already, 2980. His pace is insane. Drew Brees is at 106.7, 21 touchdowns and only 5 picks. Dak Prescott, we talked about, 104. Matthew Stafford, 101 QB rating with 18-5. But then there's Tom Brady in 4 less games than the other.
I knew you were going there.
But he's got a quarterback rating of 133.9. 12 touchdowns, not a single pick, averaging 330-some yards passing a game. It's just simply sickening. And he's 39 years old, Dennis. If you're giving out a trophy at the halfway point, who's it go to?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to say Brady when you first asked the question. I was going to wait and see if you brought him in.
Can you? You know, can he be on the list, having missed 4 of the first 9?
Well, here's the thing. I think by the end of the season, he absolutely will be on the short list of MVP. You know, right now I get that it's difficult because you've only played a little more than half the season.
Yeah, and actually I was wrong. I said four of the first nine. They had a bye, so they're four of the first.
Yeah, they had a bye.
He's only played four. Yeah, so he's got another eight games to play.
Yeah, I think you need to see, you know, if what I think is going to take place and Brady puts up his usual phone numbers for the final eight games, now you're sitting there, you're looking at a 12-game dominance that is just going to be ridiculous, and you will be able to comfortably say Tom Brady's the MVP of the league despite the fact that he only played 12 out of 16. Right now, to say four out of eight, I think is a little bit of a stretch, even as good as Brady's been. Therefore, you know, I'm sticking with Prescott. You know, I mean,
over Matty Ice and those crazy numbers I just threw out at you.
Matty Ice, yeah, no, I put him in the mix for sure.
Okay.
Stafford would be a guy I'd love to put up there. If the Lions had a couple more wins, I'd feel real comfortable about it. Derek Carr to me has to be on the list.
Yes, I forgot to say his name, but I should have. Yes, he's been tremendous.
Yeah. Right, I mean, I'm looking at the best teams. You know, the best player on the best teams in the NFL, and Carr to me has got to be on that list. So yeah, Carr, Ryan, Prescott, somebody on the Patriots having a dominant eight games. I can't think of one in particular. Belichick, can he be an MVP?
Yeah, he pretty much could, and he pretty much should. They went 3-1 without Tom Brady there,
showing
that he gets his guys ready no matter what the circumstances are. By the way, you know who the 12th leading passer in the National Football League is right now as far as quarterback rating goes?
I do not.
The 12th ranked passer right now with 96.1 quarterback rating right now. That man is... Let me see if I can help you out here. You asked for that music to describe the Browns. Cody Kessler.
Cody Kessler is
number 12 with a 96 quarterback rating. Talk about unexpected, you know, performance from a rookie.
Hey, let me tell you something about Kessler. Overall, he's one of the least of the Browns' problems. I mean, we thought he would be just completely... He would be a disaster when he first came in. You know, he's not ready and da, 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 da. I like what I've seen from Kessler on balance. It doesn't mean I think he's a franchise QB. It doesn't mean I think he's the quote answer at quarterback. I'm just saying for what he's done so far, he's down the list considerably of Browns issues.
I completely agree, Dennis Mantelot, but this is a team that has lots of issues. 0-9 and on their way potentially to 0-16. Dennis Mantelot, we appreciate your analysis. As always, my friend, we'll chat again real soon.
No problem. Take care, guys.
Thanks very much. There he is, Dennis Mantelot, as we continue. ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Congratulations, by the way, to John Sugar of Toledo. He was our latest qualifier. Tomorrow will be the last chance to qualify, by the way, at least on the radio, for the College Football Championship Flyaway contest. You can register on our website at 106.5theticket.com. We'll get a Sports Center coming up here. Come back, see if we can squeeze in a couple of phone calls before we're done on this Monday afternoon quarterback edition of the Extravaganza right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
106. Now, back to Bob France, ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yes, indeed. Final segment of the Extravaganza on a Monday afternoon quarterback edition. Thanks so much for being a part of it. Thanks to our guest today. We had our friend Chris Lemieux from PrideOfDetroit.com talking about the Lions and their amazing overtime win and the Golden Tate flip into the end zone that looked like a Rey Mysterio 619 slash Insiguri slash dropkick. I don't know what the hell you call it, but it was the best ending to an overtime game I've seen in a long time. And then we talked to Dennis Mantelot about the Cleveland Browns going 0-16 potentially. And indeed, the Benny Hill Yakety Sax music really never applied more than it does to that franchise. Kush, am I being over the top when I call them the worst professional franchise of all of team sports in North America?
No, I don't think you are.
And I say North America because, quite frankly, I know nothing about European soccer. I don't know anything about, any other countries and sports that I'm just not following that closely.
Yeah, heck, forget about them. There's enough franchises in the four North American sports to make this list anyway, even before you go to soccer in England or something.
And I might be a little unfair, too, because I don't follow hockey as much as a lot of folks do, especially in this part of the country and this part of Ohio, because there's so many Red Wings fans around here and... So I'm not as much of a hockey guy either. So maybe there's a franchise in the NHL. But when I think of the big three here, the NFL, Major League Baseball, and the NBA, and I know about the 76ers, and I know what they've done and what they haven't done, and I know about tanking, and I know about all of it. I just feel like the Browns have been doing this for longer, struggling, sucking, being awful, being non-competitive, being embarrassing, pumping out sadness from the factory of sadness at a rate that nobody can imagine. They pump out sadness from their factory faster than Apple pumps out iPhone 7s from China. It's just incredible. And they've been doing it since 1999. That's what makes them different. The 76ers were in the NBA Finals in 2001. I believe it was 2001, wasn't it, when they played the Lakers?
Yes.
And lost 4-1 with Iverson?
Iverson stole game one in L.A., then they lost 4-0, but they were there.
Eric Snow was on that team, but they were there, exactly. Yep. They were in the finals. And they've, so while recently
they were a playoff team in one of the 4 years LeBron was down in Miami. It was the second year because
that's
they upset
right.
Chicago as an 8 seed, but there's an asterisk next to that because that's when Derrick Rose went down with his injury. And that's why Philly won that series. Then the process began after that series.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So automatically you take out, the 76ers from this conversation. And I don't know, is there somebody in hockey that's comparable to what the Browns have been?
The only one I can think of, and it's probably more of the collective fans of this team having pulled their hair out for so long, the only one I can think of is the Toronto Maple Leafs, who just can't seem to get it done in any way, shape, or form. And hockey being what it is in Canada, that's the closest one in the NHL that I can think of. And by the way, back to the NBA real quick, you can't even use the Clippers anymore. There was a time where we could have at least compared it to the Clippers. That's not the case anymore.
Yeah, 80s and early 90s, but not now. Not
really their entire history until recently.
Yeah, but I mean, to the point where they were this bad for that long,
right.
I think that's been over for a while.
Yep.
I think that's been over
clearly.
For a while. So I really think it's that bad. And it's and that kills me to say. I mean, being a lifelong Cleveland fan the way you are, Jim, I mean, it kills me to say it, but there has been no franchise more inept for a longer period of time, I think, than the current edition of the Cleveland Browns, the worst franchise in all of team sports. And what they're about to do, if they match the Lions, I think will exceed the Lions, because I think if you were to put them head-to-head, put the Lions of 2008, who finished 0-16, against this team, and we'll see. There's 8 games to play. Or I'm sorry, there's 7 games to play for the Browns. They're 0-9. If they end up being winless by the time it's all done, I think the Lions of 2008 would probably be favored over these guys. So that to me just kind of
I think they would be too. I really do. It is that bad right now for the Browns. It just really is.
Hey, on tomorrow's edition of the Extravaganza, we're hopefully going to check in with Anthony Fenech, who is covering the GM meetings, the Major League Baseball GM meetings. It's kind of weird. The World Series just ended in order already. Everybody's trying to figure out next season and how do we get better and how do
we
win the whole thing.
There's already been a few trades made around the league, one involving the Tigers.
So, and some more rumors than trades, rumors of bigger deals that potentially could happen.
Absolutely.
So we're going to check with Anthony Fenech, who's covering for the Detroit Free Press, hopefully on tomorrow's program, Wednesday at the very latest. And, of course, tomorrow we'll predict what's going to happen in the second edition of the college football playoff rankings, which will come out tomorrow night as well. So we'll have that and much, much more right here on the Extravaganza. Stay where you are, because Drive Time is coming up next with Mike Miller right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
Step into modern luxury at Langham in Grandview. Your boutique Studio Plus suite awaits, with a premium kitchen, spa-inspired bathroom, and elevated finishes throughout. Just steps from your door, lounge poolside in a private cabana, unwind in the hydrotherapy spa, perfect your swing with virtual golf simulators, or visit the fitness center for a Peloton ride. Availability at Langham is limited. Reserve your Studio Plus suite today at livepreferred.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep their trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.